This is Building Bridges with Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash. The worst environmental disaster in American history, the 2010 Deepwater Horizon BP, gotta say, BP oil spill, Nayla Jefferson previews her new film, Vanishing Pearls. Nayla chronicles the untold story of personal devastation in Ponte alla Hache, a close-knit fishing village on the Gulf Coast, and the fight of this community of African-American fishermen for justice, accountability, and their way of life.
We're going to be talking with Nayla Jefferson, but first a trailer from the film Vanishing Pearls.
Point Lahash is a small fishing village in Plaquemine Parish, Louisiana. It is primarily an African-American community, with seafood being its primary industry. And I employ my brother, my two nephews, and five cousins.
This probably be the best barrel crab you ever ate.
We have that advantage here, working with these fresh products. The fishermen, they are most important to us. It's our livelihood. It brings us visitors and it helps the economy. It's everything to this area.
This oil spill is the worst environmental disaster America has ever faced. We will make BP pay for the damage their company has caused.
Dead. Everything dead.
These communities have nobody to fight for them. They have no voice. I chose to do it, and I'm going to do it, and hell and high water won't stop me.
In the news media, oh, we didn't know they had black fishermen. Hello? 90% of the fishermen down here are black.
The thing that struck me about these fishermen was the fact that there was a history that has not been told.
They've been fishing these waters for generations.
Now I'm living off of $200 a month worth of food stamps.
Day in, day out, I hear the same stories, not just from my brother, but from the entire community. People claims being denied or offered pennies for their losses.
I've been on these waters since I was a child. Between the state bad policies and BP oil spill, they have destroyed us.
This is like we've been poisoned and they left us to die.
And if it wasn't for living here with my dad or my children, I would be homeless.
And now to see him in this situation, it's just hard.
The world must know what they have done to this community. This place could have been a paradise.
And you see, that's the thing that's so remarkable about this film, because it does have all the trappings through the magnificent creativity and cinematography of a paradise. And then, Nayla, you just break my heart. You create this perfect storm of the loss of livelihood, the destruction of the environment, and the destruction of a culture and a way multi-generational that people have lived their lives that just frankly break me apart. I have to commend you for doing that, because the story must be told, and you tell it so magnificently. And welcome to Building Bridges.
Thank you for having me. It's been an experience. I mean, we followed that community for about 3.5 years, and just as you say, the story is heartbreaking. It was really hard to watch these families, this community that had so much hope when the spill occurred that they would be able to recover and have their way of life back. It was really heartbreaking to watch them ultimately come to the reality that that is not so, and so they're in a terrible predicament now. A lot of these fishermen are 50, 60 years old, and they're having to kind of start over again.
You know, I watched the film last night, and it just completed the contrast between the beautiful area that this is, and the people are so wonderful, and and then it's all being destroyed by BP, and BP doesn't know when to stop destroying. I mean, even their method of cleanup seems to have made the situation worse in terms of the fishermen. Do you want to get into that and the use of dispersants and how that contributed to the problem after the spill?
Yes. One fisherman that I was talking to recently described dispersant as like a Teflon coating on his oyster reefs. And that's what's going on now. So dispersant 9500 and 9527 were sprayed in the aftermath of the explosion and to break up the oil. But because so much dispersant was used not only on top of the water but also underwater right at the wellhead, it was just so much that the oil didn't break up. It just settled it down to the bottom. So all of the bottom dwellers, the shrimp, the crab, the oysters are now having trouble. The oysters in particular, because unlike shrimp and crab, they can't move. So right now, those reefs have been smothered by this dispersed oil, and we're not seeing very much recovery, very much reproduction in the Lake Pontchartrain Basin. That's where the oyster fishermen, Point of Lahash, harvest their oysters.
So we have the spill of 200 million gallons of oil, and then we have the cleanup process, in quotes, which is likely as toxic as the effects of the oil. I want you to continue, which you did so beautifully in the film, to put a human face on these people, because this was a job that it has roots. You see it kind of percolating up the kind of way they earn their living and defining the very way that they live their lives. Flesh that out for us a bit until people get to see the film themselves.
Well, this community is a community of about 300 people, primarily African-American fishermen. And after slavery, these communities settled. This community settled in Point of Lahash, and they began to fish. And they worked more in a sharecropping type of system because they were poorer, because they were black. They weren't allowed to own boats. They weren't allowed to own oyster leasing grounds. So for a very, very long time, they worked on these bigger boats that were owned by wealthier white fishermen, or should I just say white boat owners. And they actually went out, harvested the oysters, and came back and had to give a third of what they made away. But this community is very, very just enterprising community, I'll say. They came up with a new way to fish called a hand dredge that allowed them to go out on smaller boats. They no longer had to work on these huge boats in order to work. They went out on smaller boats, they used a small hand dredge, and they pulled themselves up by their bootstraps, so to speak, and they became independent businessmen. Through that, they were able to build some wealth, and then they became the big boat owners, and they became the leaseholders. And so that would bring you to about the 80s, the 90s. And by 2005, this community was really thriving. Then they were hit by Katrina. Many lost their boats, they lost their homes. The eye of the storm made landfall on Plaquemines Parish, and that's where Point of Lahash is. So these are people who were for about 5 years really working hard to get back on their feet, and then in 2010, the BP spill occurs. And people often ask, what's the difference between Katrina and the BP spill? Or after Katrina, if you were able to fix up your boat, you could still go back on the water. The resource was still there, and you could make a living. But the problem with the spill is that the disaster occurred in the water, and now that resource is gone. And so that is the current state of Point of Lahash and their history in a nutshell.
But there was a $20 billion settlement BP was forced to chip in, which was distributed by a victims' compensation fund, which was overseen by Kenneth Feinberg, who's supposed to be very distinguished. And so these people got the money, right? They were made whole.
Well, that's the message that BP is putting out currently, right? They're saying, we're the victims, we've paid people, we've overpaid people, we should be able to walk away from this thing. Our job is done. But indeed, that's not would happen, at least for a lot of the fishermen that I've encountered in Point Lahash. There was a $20 billion escrow account BP set up. Mr. Feinberg was in charge of distributing that money. What happened was they dished out a lot of money in the beginning, I truly believe, just to get their numbers up, to say, hey, you know, we've paid this many people. And I also want people to know that it wasn't just fishermen. You could work a retail job. You could work at a restaurant. People were encouraged to file these claims, and they were initially getting $5,000. Those were emergency payments that were made just after the spill. Now, we moved on to an interim and final claims program that Mr. Feinberg put in place. 3 months into that, hardly anybody was getting paid. So now the people who really relied on the water, the fishermen, are kind of in dire straits. And then they come up with another program just before Christmas called a quick pay program. And within 14 days, you can get $5,000 if you are an individual, $25,000 if you own a business. Now, if you're a person, your back is up against the wall, it's the holiday season, you have a family that you want to provide for, you're going to take this claim. And so that's what happened with a lot of these fishermen. And by the conclusion of the GCCF, that was the claim system that Feinberg was over in April 2012, over 50% of the fishermen had signed away their rights under that program, and the average payout for fishermen was $25,000, which was completely inadequate. From there, we moved on to this Deepwater Horizon court-ordered settlement. The escrow account shrunk down from $20 billion to $9.8 billion, with a $2.3 billion cap on fishing claims, and that has been incredibly slow-moving. Less than half of the fishing claims made have been paid out since then, and that's been 2 years. And as you see in the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times, BP is putting out full-page ads saying that we are indeed the victims and that we shouldn't have to pay any more claims.
I just want to go back to the disbursements, because what happens with them is, of course, the oil is removed from the surface and mm-hmm. the oil sinks to the bottom. And certainly there have been reports of things like yellowfin tuna with a heart disease.
Right.
There is a layer on the ocean floor mm-hmm. that is just indeed layered with this dispersant. And it's really a holocaust that is your film describes for the people and for the fishing industry. Mm-hmm. And I want to know what has been the response to the making, to the production and showing of the film. Has there been any meaningful response either from political officials or from members of the company to the kinds of devastation that continue to be wrought on this community, to the entire Gulf area, really?
Well, the film just premiered, and so we're hoping that thus far the response has been great. But we are hoping that our local politicians step up, that they're able to see what has gone on in this community. And this isn't just Point Lahash. This is going on in other Gulf Coast communities as well, that they're able to see the devastation, the true human effect of what's been caused by this spill, and that they are moved to action. Thus far, unfortunately, my answer to your question is no. There hasn't been any response locally or by BP saying that, okay, now we see what's really unfolded and we should try and right this terrible wrong that we are the cause for. So unfortunately, no. But that's the goal of the film. It wasn't just to chronicle this community and what's happened to them in the aftermath of the oil spill. It really is to try and save their legacy that has lasted down there for over a century.
And that's what is the power of this film, that there is complaint and there is resistance. Can you talk about the collective response of this community as it tries desperately to hold on to its existence?
Right.
To indeed exist.
Right. That's a fight that's really led by the subject of the film, Byron Inkelade. He's a veteran. He's really looked up to as kind of a patriot, because this is really a way of life that's worth preserving. As you described the film in the beginning, it really does look like a paradise. And that's, you know, that's not just through crafty camera work. That is,
although there is gorgeous, crafty,
beautiful film.
Thank you.
Turn off the soundtrack, and you don't hear terrible things that are happening.
But thank you. But that really is, and that's one reason why I was so captured by this place. It's 55 miles away from New Orleans, which, you know, in itself is a great city, but it's really a world apart. This is a place where they still don't lock their doors at night. It's really a village that's raising a child down there. I mean, it's really just, it's such a sense of community, and it's so beautiful. I wanted to do these people justice, and I wanted to do their story justice. And so, like I said, Byron tells us at the end of the film, this place could have been a paradise, and it was for so long. And I think that's why it's so hard for them to let go of this way of life. And as he puts it, you know, I was born on these bayous, I'm going to die on these bayous. So he's going to continue to lead his people. He realizes that fishermen are getting tired, they're getting worn out. But he also realizes this is what makes them unique, and their communities pour so much into not just Point of La Hache, but into cities like New Orleans and the whole identity of what Louisiana is, what we're known for. We're known for our seafood. We're known for being this kind of jewel. And without these coastal communities supporting that, then everyone is affected.
And I just wanted to briefly, though, if you could just, we touched on this, that it's why this is a case study, and this is a very apt instance to do the case study of this particular community, but it's a much wider problem.
Mm-hmm.
Can you give us some idea about how many fishermen are affected throughout the Gulf region and what's going on? What's going on there?
Over 50% of the fishing industry took these very small claims amounting to an average of $25,000. And it's been a four-year impact, every year getting worse and worse. So over 4 years, you have to try and stretch out this $25,000 claim or find another way of life. A lot of these fishermen, 50, 60 years old, we have one gentleman in the film who says, you know, I'm 63 years old, who's going to hire me? And that's what a lot of these guys are facing. And beyond just the money, it's really a loss of culture. This was a way of life that was passed down from generation to generation. And now because of BP and the spill and basically their negligence, this is a way of life that seems to be no more in a lot of these communities, particularly those on the east side of the Mississippi River who harvested in Lake Pontchartrain Basin. Those oyster catches down there are down 71% since before the spill. That is a huge impact.
Well, hell or high water, we're going to have to address this, and we're going to have to demonstrate our support for the fishermen of Point de la Hache. Thank you for making this very, very, very important film, and I encourage everybody to see it. And we'll try to get you back and find out how the film's doing as it shows around the country.
Great. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for making
support.
The film.
Most importantly, and we've been speaking with Nayla Jefferson, who really built some bridges to our brother fishermen, oyster fishermen down in the Gulf Coast, and we have a lot of work to do.
Ancient waters, bayou waters, whispered into life by the voice of God. Ancient waters, breathing waters, yielding the fruit of the Lord. Ancient waters, washing waters, drying out hurt and pain. Ancient waters, bayou waters, building lives of harvest and gain. And we believe that the world started here, on these bayous. God started it all here. He stood back and admired it, blessed and confided to his angels. God said that this is good. On these bayous, God started it here. On the bayous, God started it all here.
Oystermen say a major oyster shortage means higher prices.
The general manager of Deanie's restaurant says he's seen oysters like this nearly double in price.
For about a month, we didn't even have any oysters. We stopped serving them because the price was really high and the supply was really low.
But some oystermen say their harvest is at an all-time low. The lingering effects of the BP oil spill, 3 years later, the mature oysters have been harvested with little left to replace them.
Seeing all the time BP claiming that they have restored the Gulf, that things are better, that the fisheries are back. If you say something enough times, people believe it. And that's the tragedy of this whole thing, is that there's still this huge impact and no one believes it anymore. I've never met an adversary like this. You know, they know what to offer you. They know when to do it. And they know what message to be giving.
We made an agreement that I believe has been hijacked, and it is paying out absurd results.
Hijacked by local authorities, by federal authorities.
Hijacked by the interpretation of the agreement we
made
by claims administrator.
BP, very quickly after the oil was shut down and the cameras were turned off, turned from this proactive, we were going to do the right thing, into that defensive posture that industry goes into. That's part of what's going on with this whole controversy about the claims process. They tore apart communities, but poor BP?
No, it's just, you know, it's just survival, you know. At the age of 53 years old, you know, I mean, I basically don't know where to start at now, you know. It just looks like life just shut down, that I don't go down to the boat. You know, my dad take care of it. You go check it, unless something really wrong with it. Because I go down there and get depressed. You got all this work you done put into something, and to come from Katrina and to build yourself back up, and to see all your hard work just sitting there, you know, it's a lick. It's a big lick. When you have something like that in your life, I guess you take it for granted that it's going to always be there.
In this particular case, the events that preceded this flood of 2011 was the oil spill, crude oil that flows at the surface is not a great deal of harm. It's the dispersed oil. And I will tell you from my sampling here in this parish within the last month that the areas that had this dispersed oil in the water column, those are not now catching any new spat. And I believe because the matrices of the shell still have dispersed oil in them, 3 years out from the spill, that's where you have the greatest problem. And so parts of the fertile fisheries crescent became infertile.
Did I think we were going to be hurting this bad? No. Did I think my whole business would have collapsed? No. This fishing industry, my community and my family have relied on for centuries. Now we are being pushed out because of greed. No class of people should have to sacrifice their lives and a heritage for somebody else to get rich. Fishermen can't fish.
I was a fisherman all my life. That's all I ever did. I ain't never had no land, y'all. And all that gone. We all too old to get another job now. No land, y'all. I'm 63 years old. Who gonna hire me? At 63.
This is our time now, and this is our fight. At the end of the day, we're all commercial fishermen. And when you attack one, you attack all. Let's stay united. That's what they want to do, divide us. We're not going to let it happen this time. Not this time. This is our fight. We're going to win it. Thank you.
This has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg
and Ken Nash. And log on to our website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.